Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Michael Holly. It's Tuesday, so what's going on, Holly?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm delicious, like they always say.
No, I'm not. That's right. That's right.
Another day, busy month, of course. A lot of writers this month. A lot of do the Patterson interview coming up, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to be doing this Phelps interview. I'm excited.
I've never heard of. No, actually, this is this will be a great interview because he's done some, of course, lots of television. And written, I believe, 45 books. One thing I will say about the guest is that he gets involved in the case. He goes out there and he really does the research, which I love those types of true crime writers rather than, because there's a lot of stuff out there right now, a lot of stuff. And when you get writers like this, it's easy to just go, yeah, pick up the book, because you know it's going to be done well. So let's welcome him. So M. William Phelps, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Call me Matthew, and I appreciate that introduction.
Well, you know, but it's true in a sense, because I find that, because I've done books myself and I've done TV shows, I've done a lot of this stuff, and I really take it serious, and I spend the time, and I go out and meet the people, and I do the research, and I think it's a good thing. I think you're doing something good for who you're writing it about. So it's really important to do the book properly and spend the time, I think, you know. And so I appreciate the work you do.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I've dedicated my career to investigative journalism, and I do get right into it. I get on the ground. I get, you know, I like to develop sources and talk to people and get the real story. Besides the story, as you said, there's so much out there right now that, you know, a lot of it is just rehashed newspaper articles, etc. And so I like to get the story that's underneath the story. You know, I don't generally write about headline making stories, Murdaugh, you know, a JonBenet, that sort of thing. I look for the stories that are within the fabric of America, you know, that are just not making headlines, but really tell the story of crime in America.
What's your kind of thoughts, being in the crime world for so long? Do you think that crime is getting worse or better?
You're touching on something here for me. I was just actually writing about this today, actually. I'm glad you asked, Alan. this is not a setup. No. Where is true crime? I don't like where true crime is headed. I'm not a big fan of where it's at or where it's headed. And the reason I say that is there's just way too much of it. And the too much is not a good thing. There's too many podcasts. I mean, I have two, but there are way too many podcasts. There's all these self-published nonsense, grammatically incorrect, unvetted, disgusting, terrible books that are just being put up on Amazon and other online places. And I'm tired of it. I've had it up to here with it all. Look, I have done almost 400 hours of television in my career, and television is again, they just keep regurgitating the same names over and over and over again. Bundy, Dahmer, you know, Gacy, and there are just so many stories from the victim's point of view, from the families of the victims' point of view that need to be told. And what we're seeing and what we're reading about and what we're hearing is not what America is. You know, I don't know what to do about it other than add my contribution to it the best I can, you know.
No, I have the same feeling. I get the same thoughts in my mind. There's way too many of the podcasts out there that are just people – talking about what they've read on Wikipedia so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and, you know, hey, it's whatever people want to do. But I sort of, it's turned me off the whole area. And again, I do books sort of like you. I've been going into places and I meet people and go to the prison and meet, and you talk to the family and they're really, I get them involved in the stories when I do true crime because that's important. The story is about them. And survivors and what goes on after the cameras are turned off. And I agree with you. I'm not really into doing the Ted Bundy and, you know, the mainstream sort of stuff that you see 20 programs a year on if you want. You know, it's kind of, it's overboard. And I don't know why. Why are people so fascinated, you think, in this?
I get this question probably three times a week. Why is there so much interest in true crime? And, you know, I read articles by psychologists and by people, I call them the bow tie police, you know, professors, et cetera, who don't really know what they're talking about. They're opening up, the DSM-5 and they're going through and they're looking, where's true crime in this book? What's the disorder? Look, true crime has been Americans forever. You know, whether it was Walter Cronkite talking about, the latest big murder story or, you know, it was a Scooby-Doo, you know, the cartoon when they were chasing, you know, creepers. So we're all interested in a mystery and in solving a mystery or watching people solve a mystery. I like to say this. I like to say that, you know, when I was a kid, one of my favorite shows was Columbo. And look, in Columbo, within 2 minutes, you know who the murderer is in that series. But you stick around for the 90 minutes to see how Columbo is going to catch the guy or the gal. So, you know, we're in search of with Leonard Nimoy. That was a big show. You know, we can date it back to the 70s when that idiotic, now seemingly idiotic, Bigfoot, 8mm film came out of the Bigfoot in
Patterson film.
Yes.
Patterson.
Yes.
Yes.
That trumped up thing. And so, you know, it's like we want to solve this mystery. So it's only logical now with the amount of violence that is, you know, pumped out into the airwaves on TikTok and Twitter and on social media and on the internet that, you know, we up the ante, right? In Search Of has become In Search Of a Serial Killer, right? So, you know, In Search Of Bigfoot has become In Search Of a Serial Killer. So it's just human nature, you know, and look, if something is successful on television or in books, podcasting, whatever, you know, you're going to see a lot more of it. And there's no shortage of it on the streamers, you know, it's just the quality, you know, and when you get so much of it, the quality tends to lack. The quality is just not there anymore. I mean, look at Thin Blue Line, you know, really the pinnacle true crime documentary that was the first true crime documentary that used recreations. Errol Morris, I believe. And, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Look how great that was, you know, and compare that to what you see today, you know. So it's, yeah, and like I said, all I can do is just keep doing what I'm doing the best I can do it and try to keep raising the bar the best I can. And be, I guess, content with knowing that I'm doing all I can to make this about the victim, the victim's families, about missing people, about minorities, about all of that. I just do my part, and hope, you know, that this curve, you know, we get around this curve soon.
I remember, in 2000, a few years back, I was in a series called Legend Hunter, and Pat Spain, he was a biologist, and what he was trying to do was basically debunk things. So like, yes, he was talking about the Whitechapel murders with me, but then he would go into, let's say, werewolves or, you know, any of that stuff. The reason why they canceled the show is because people didn't want to see that.
Right. No, makes sense.
So how do you? How would you? Let's say you're producing something and you have to go to, let's say, a network. You know, I can see how difficult it will be to sell it to the network.
Oh, it's beyond difficult right now. I mean, it is beyond difficult right now to sell anything. The networks have so much control over the content when you get into true crime. They take over the creative, basically. And you either got to sign up for that and try to fight battles and get the wins you can, or you just have to walk away from it, you know? And, you know, now when I get called, and I get called a lot to go on true crime shows, you know, I always take a look at the show and see what they're doing. I just filmed something for ABC News Media, which is going to be good. I mean, I know it's going to be good. It's from the people who make 2020, and, you know, I know it's going to be a solid show, the best it can be for a network, you know. But you're exactly right. I mean, people want ghost hunters. They want that ending where, well, oh my God, we don't know. We don't know.
Elvis is back. Elvis.
Yeah. So, you know, the networks are going to give the audience what they want, no matter what it is. And no matter what it is, they're going to give them what they want. And, you know, until that changes, we're just going to see, you know, what we see. The great thing for me about podcasting, especially when we're talking about iHeartMedia, who does my show Paper Ghosts, which I'm just finishing up the fourth season now, is that, you know, they kind of give me carte blanche. They kind of let me do my thing. You know, I never forget the meeting I went to in New York with iHeart, and they were just starting the podcast division, and they, you know, I met with the two heads there of the podcast division, and they said, listen, we know how to distribute. We know how to sell advertising. We know how – you're the true crime guy. You do your thing. Let us do our thing. And I love that type of relationship, a partner like that, because, yeah, I mean, it's not all – you know, it's not always a linear narrative. It's not always a bow tie at the end. It's not always, you know, going to wrap up like you hope it will. And that's part of it. That's part of what I do. That's the investigative journalism part of what I do, is I get the story, and I allow victims' families to speak, and I talk about the victims, and then I look for information in unsolved cases and missing person cases that simply wasn't there before. And I've done a pretty good job of digging up new information with just about all of the stuff that I've done, especially podcasting. But TV would never allow that. TV would never, ever. They want to know what the bow tie looks like, what color it is, everything, before you start filming. I mean, they want to know all of that. There's no surprise endings in TV, before you start filming. And you either got to sign up for that or you don't, you know, and right now I am signed up for it. You know, you know, and look, I'm not complaining, although I might sound like it. I'm not bitter. I'm just, I don't like where it's headed. You know, I want to see it. I mean, because there is a lot of good stuff out there, and it gets lost in all the muck of, you know, everything else, you know.
Right. There's got to be, it seemed to be more, there was a pretty decent level of quality that was around, and now it's kind of it's a free for all. So there's just everything going on, and that's TV and radio and everything. It's just kind of.
I mean, you're so right. I mean, and for example, I have a story that came to me this year that I'm debating whether to go to TV with it or what, just because of certain things. But, you know, I'll just give you the first 2 minutes of the documentary, and it's a winner. I have a P.O. box for my business, for my brand, in another town, for obvious reasons, right? Yeah. And that's where all the mail comes in from killers and serial killers and fans and that sort of thing. So I go there every couple of weeks to check
pick up everything. So I go there this summer, and it's a P.O. box. It's, 3x3 or whatever. It's very small. And I get there, and Fred, the postal clerk, says, "Hey, Phelps, you know, all that stuff there in the back, that's all yours." And I said, "What stuff?" He goes, all those boxes. And there was like 15 legal size boxes and a package on top. And I said, "That can't be for me." And he said, "Yeah, it's addressed to you." And he said, "But it's also the return address is you.
Ah.
Did you send it to yourself?" I said, "Fred, why the hell would I send myself 15 boxes? Come on." So I go over to it. I look at it all. I pick up the package off the top, and it's a manila envelope. And I open up this package, and there's a letter in it. And here, I'll stop here. Here's the first line of the letter. "When you receive all of this, by the time it gets to you, I would have already killed myself."
Oh, boy.
That's the first line. So if I'm doing a documentary, you go to commercial right there. That's huge. Everyone's coming back for that, you know. Now, as the story carries on, it's not going to become, at certain parts, it's not going to become the story that, say, True Crime TV would sign off on all of it. So I'm debating, maybe I hold on to this for a little bit and keep investigating it. And, but yeah, so now I question everything. I think my point is, and now I question, what am I going to do with this? Is this going to be a podcast? Am I going to write a deck and produce a sizzle for it and pitch it to TV? That's very rare that happens now for me over the past couple of years, just because of the market right now, and what they're looking for and where it's at. I mean, it's not my game, you know?
Well, you have more control and you have a better product if you kind of run it yourself rather than going to some of these places, I would guess, for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do a lot of work with different production companies all over LA, all over New York, and they're always coming to me for ideas and what do you have now and stuff like that. And we both look at each other a lot and say, "Oh, this is going to be tough," today, and so it's, see, and this is what I'm talking about when I say that the abundance of the stuff hurts the stuff. Because then you got a guy like me who's got a real great story that people will just jump aboard and follow to the end. And I know that it's not going to go much further than development. And so I hold off. And what does that do? That it's not out there, right? It doesn't get out there. So that's why I say the cookie cutter stuff just keeps on, Makeup and Murder. Makeup and Murder is like one of the top, 60, 70 podcasts out of all podcasts, Makeup and Murder. So, and these Makeup and Murder videos on TikTok that, someone's just reading, as you said, Wikipedia off a case and they're putting on makeup. These things get millions of views. So I can't explain that. I can't explain that. So it's, and I try to, I've interviewed some of these people and, I don't know. I mean, it's bothersome to me, because in it all, ultimately the victim and the victim's families get lost. And that's the stuff that just enrages me. They get lost in all of it,
Well, you could always try doing some makeup while you do your.
I have. I did a funny actually TikTok one day. I was getting ready to shoot something, for TV, and I was in the restroom and I was putting on some powder before the interview, and I did a little TikTok that said, "Yep, I'm actually putting on makeup, and then I'm going to go do true crime on TV." I'm not mixing the two together. I'm not going to give you the story now. And look, there's a younger generation now that's turning to true crime. And we see that with Crime Junkie, the number two podcast out of all podcasts. Ashley Flowers, she's very successful. She does a good job. She's managed to really just rope in that young audience. They love her. I don't know. It just is what it is, as they say,
Yeah, I think the only thing is that I think it's there's not a lot of substance to it. It's just flash and it's just to the moment and there's something new every day and there's no depth. Nobody's really getting into anything. There's nothing but pure entertainment. And a lot of times when I've seen some of the TikToks, even on stories I've covered, they even get it wrong.
Yeah, they always get it wrong. I mean, yeah. Look, you know, another thing is Crime Con and this year at Crime Con, one of the Idaho, the four murders of the college kids. One of the mothers showed up and she sat and she listened to a talk in the back of the room that a forensic guy was giving about the Idaho case. And then she got up on the mic and said, well, you pronounced my son's name wrong, number one, and you got some facts wrong. You know, so, you know, some of these people are being called out, but, you know, does it change anything? I don't know. But, yeah, they get stuff wrong all the time. And once it's out there, it's out there. I mean, there's nothing you can do. It's just, it's, you know, millions of people have seen it. Look, we all get stuff wrong. I mean, I've written 46 books. There's mistakes in those books, not intended, but, you know, stuff happens. You know, I try to vet everything with lawyers, everybody, editors, producers, everything, you know, to the max. But, you know, you're going to miss stuff. But, you know, this stuff that's out there now is just blatantly, you know, just regurgitated newspaper articles and Wikipedia and internet, you know, news that's not even news, you know, it's blogs and what have you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here it is. You wrote that you're an investigative journalist. To me, that was your game a long time ago. That's like your core discovery. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, when I got into writing books in the 90s, I just dove right in and started, you know, investigating the case. Just because the case was adjudicated or not didn't mean there wasn't more story to tell. So I just started sniffing around, you know, and I wanted the bigger story. I wanted exclusive information. I wanted the story that wasn't being told, you know.
So now with where you are at, it seems to me that you're so overwhelmed with all of this stuff. Do you miss some of that stuff that you could have done, could have gotten in deeper with, or do you have the time to do that?
No, I do it now with, you know, with Paper Ghosts, my podcast. I spent a lot of time this summer out in the Ozarks, and that's where the two cases I'm covering in season four, that's where they originate. So I spent, you know, a tremendous amount of time out there developing sources, knocking on doors, approaching suspects, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
That's a little dangerous, isn't it?
It depends. It depends. Really not. Okay. I mean, I guess it could be. But, I've done so many books about serial killers. I've interviewed so many serial killers. These guys, they're afraid of guys like me. Yeah, they go after women and children. They don't go after guys like me. They go after people who they can control. They can't control me. You know, so they're very much cowardly when it comes to that. But nonetheless, I mean, I guess it could be dangerous. But I always make sure I cover myself when I do this stuff. I have certain things I do, you know, things I have, things. Yeah, but I'm deeper in it now than I ever was, actually, the investigative part. Yeah. Because Paper Ghosts and iHeartRadio or iHeartMedia has allowed me to do that. They've said, you go do your thing. And my thing is to get in, you know, neck deep in the stuff, you know. So I said, okay, I will, you know.
Well, you know, I always just give them Mike's address when I'm out there.
Yes.
Hey, yeah, this is where I live. Here's my phone number.
Well, I will too now.
Now, Al does that because the serial killers he's interviewed are behind bars.
Yeah.
So they can't touch them.
Yeah. Hey, so when you're doing Paper Ghosts, like this is, like you just said, finishing fourth, what do you do in your podcast? What are people going to get when they listen to one of your series?
So Paper Ghosts is an investigative narrative podcast, chapters, if you will. So it's usually 8 to 10 episodes, and I follow the case from beginning to end. And each week it comes out when it when it, the first episode is released, it, you know, it rides every week until the 8 or 10 episodes are up, and you get a new episode every week, but it furthers the story along. So it's like a limited series you'd see on Netflix, if you will, in podcast form. And, you know, it's me, boots on the ground, investigating the case, interviewing, you know, for this one, I think I've done 100 interviews. It's getting into the documents. I try to score, obviously, audio for the podcast that no one's heard. And, you know, and I come back and I go through it all and I build a board and I try to figure it all out and I continue to investigate. And, you know, I write up the episodes. I have like 3-4 people working for me that, you know, an audio guy, a producer, a script consultant, a sound design, executive producer. And, you know, I put it all together and then we go through it and vet it and yeah. And so it's a limited series. It's a narrative, from A to Z of not necessarily a case. It's a case that develops, you know, like, for example, the one I'm doing now is the case out of the lower southern Ozarks, where a young woman left the store one day and went missing. 2 months later, her body's found. A year later, another body's found. So this stuff starts developing. And, you know, I interview whoever I can. I take it through the whole case.
Do you have a makeup artist, too?
I don't for that because, you know, you can see me about as well as you can right now.
Well, you never know. You might want to do some videos to promote it. I just say it. When you get to these serial killers, one of the biggest things I hear as well around the world and on these shows and all that, they're always trying to give you the reason why this person killed,
right,
or did what they did. And it drives me nuts because most of the time the people they're talking about, they've never interviewed. They don't have any psychological reporting on them. We don't know anything about them other than, well, their mother was cruel to them when they were 5 or their father was a drunk. And I'm thinking, you know, should I had that? I, you know, there has to be more, but everyone's looking for that quick fix answer, and I think it's much deeper.
Well, no one really says or wants to say what the truth is for serial killers. They enjoy it. They enjoy killing. That's their game. They like to kill. They get a high off it. They're driven by fantasies. They relive those fantasies through torturing and raping and killing victims. But that's not the sexy answer that people want to hear. I mean, when you're dealing with a psychopath, you have to throw everything that you know as a person who's not a psychopath out the window because they don't think like you or I in very few things that I've seen delve into this. A really great documentary. It's an hour long. There's no flash to it. It's called Psychopath. I think it's available on, you know, you can get it on YouTube, whatever, $2.99, whatever. It's an hour long. It's like almost an educational film, but Dr. Robert Hare is in it. And Dr. Robert Hare developed the 20 characteristics, the checklist,
right, right,
of a psychopath. So he's in it. And they go into prisons and they interview psychopaths. And you will get exactly what a psychopath is when you're done with watching this 60 minutes. It will be clear to you who they are. And if you've ever sat in front of a serial killer and looked them in the eye, you see that. You see the shallow gaze. You see the emptiness there. You see that they don't care. They just don't care. Be that the fault of the way they were born without, you know, empathy, sympathy, love, whatever, or the abuse they suffered or whatever. I mean, hundreds of thousands of kids are abused and they don't turn out to be serial killers. You know, the real answers aren't as sexy as the ones that, you know, people want to hear. And I try to give it straight up. This is who they are. This is what they do. And this is why they do it, you know. There isn't an answer always. The answer is they like it. It's fun. I interviewed one serial killer for 12 years, 12 years worth of interviews, hundreds and hundreds of hours of audio and Skype and visiting him, and he wrote me 9,000 pages of letters. And so, you know, I dug deep into that mind to get at the core of what drove him. And there's nothing driving him. It's just what he does.
Yeah.
you know, his comment one time to me was, you know, 90% of the time I was a good guy. 10% of the time I wasn't. And, you know, I asked all the questions everybody would want to ask, you know, are you evil? And he said, well, I don't believe in evil, but if there is a thing called evil, I am it for sure. So it's really textbook, you know. The other thing that I think has been perpetrated over the years on television and especially with serial killer shows is that they're the typical live in the basement, drive a van, you know, they were abused and, you know, like you said, you know, alcoholism and beaten and all this. And some of that may be true, but the reality of it all is they're atypical. One serial killer is not like the next serial killer,
right,
in that sense, you know, in the psychological sense of they enjoy killing, yes, but you know, they're not all cut from the same fabric, the same cloth. They're not.
Right.
It's probably like when you look at the Long Island serial killer, although there's not a prosecution yet, but even the people that worked under him were completely astounded. But probably one of the reasons is because we have this cookie-cutter idea of what serial killers are. They don't fit that.
Right. I mean, if that kind of rhetoric wasn't out there, they would have probably noticed more about him, because he did give off some indication that, not that he was a serial killer, no one can give that off, but that he wasn't right.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, you stay away from those people. You know, we know in life, we know, well, that person there, that person's not right. You know, you stay away from that person.
Like, and sometimes dogs know that, and people don't listen to their dogs.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah,
it's very true. You heard mine bark earlier.
Yeah, that's because of Mike, not me.
You know, I just started talking a little bit, and then your dog picked that up. What the heck?
Yeah, where is he? You've got the relaunch of a book, Dead Soul. So what's that about?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
The Dead Soul is about 10 years ago, I decided I wanted to write a thriller. I wanted to take what I learned about serial killers and all the cases that I had not done anything with, and I wanted to create some characters around that and just write a bona fide beach, sit by the fire, sit in bed thriller. And that's what The Dead Soul is. It's fiction, and it's about a detective with a great name, I should say. I'm very proud of myself. Jake Sundance Cooper, who is a detective in the Boston Police Department. And he, you know, he's a bit embattled. His career is imploding. He needs a big solve, if you will. And there's some corruption going on in the Boston PD that he's starting to sniff around at. Meanwhile, there's a serial killer leaving bodies along the Freedom Trail. And so there's a little bit of Hollywood in it. You know, I wrote the book as kind of a screenplay, if you will, so you could just burn through it. But, you know, the psychological aspects of it, I tried to keep legit, with the Hollywood stuff being, you know, the surroundings, et cetera. But yeah, so it's a whodunit.
Yeah.
It's a whodunit. Who is he? What did he do? And who's going to die next? You know, and will Jake Sundance Cooper, will he save his career and solve the case to live for another book? And yeah, so and Wild Blue Press, decided to reissue it, this week. So I made some updates and yeah, it's a fun little book, fun little sadistic book.
Good words together. So when you get into a thriller like this, how do you get into the characters that you write? Like, how do you experience them? Are you hearing dialogue? Do you kind of,
did you hear me sigh?
Yeah.
Did you hear
well, me? I mean, yeah. So, well, I'm always interested in that and in kind of what you're experiencing when you're writing something like that.
Here's why I don't write a lot of these, because with the nonfiction, I can compartmentalize. I can come into my office at 5:30 a.m., which I usually do, leave at 5:00. shut the door, and, you know, and I can go watch a cooking show. And the world is good. Phelps's world is good. With the fiction, once I turn it on, it doesn't seem to shut off for me. So I find myself in bed writing notes. I find myself driving, taking notes. You know, I'm at the beach, I'm at dinner. You know, it's just, I've turned this story on, and it doesn't stop until I'm done with it. And so that's my process. I just go with it. You know, I go with that. But how do I create them? You know, look, when you're creating fiction, you're stealing from everybody that you know, everybody you see in the supermarket. You know, you are thieving from those people's lives. And anybody who tells me different is a liar. James Patterson included, everybody is a liar.
Well, I'll tell him.
So yeah, you tell him I said that. So, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, there's no way you can make all of that up. You know, if I read something about, look, if I read something about Stalin or Trump or Biden or whoever, and I like it, and I think, ooh, I can add that one little twerk to my guy. What, that one little thing will just add another layer of character to my guy or my killer or whatever. So I'm constantly reading. When I'm writing a fiction, I'm reading a lot more than I am actually writing. All kinds of stuff. I'm just reading everything I can, and nonfiction wise, and yeah, it just develops for me. It just develops for me out of that.
What takes the most out of you? Like when you're writing a story about true events, and you're going around and you're talking about the family and the survivors, and then the victims and the killers themselves and stuff. So you write a true story. That's one thing. When you write a fiction, it's another. But which do you think takes the most out of you emotionally, or changes you, for instance?
Well, as fatigue-wise, just as far as endurance, it would be fiction because it's nonstop for me.
Right.
Emotionally, it's like I had this series on Discovery Channel 10, 12 years ago, Dark Minds, where I went around the country and I looked at unsolved serial killer cases. And that was just the heaviest thing I've ever done. I mean, I sat in living room after living room of mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, boyfriends who had lost kids, people to serial killers. And some days I would interview two or three families, a 12-hour day, and just... It just takes, you know, you just take on. I'm an empath by nature, so I just take on all that pain. You know, it was a lot. I would go on the road 3-4 months at a time, and you know, on the road when you're filming a show, you know, you're 6 days on, one day off, and they're, you know, they're 12-hour days, sometimes more. Just especially with mothers and fathers who lost kids. Some of the cases I did involved, you know, 12, 13, 14, 16-year-old kids, even younger. That was the worst. That was the worst. What do you say? What do you say? I'm in your living room with lights, with a camera, with, you know, a bunch of people. You know, we got garbage bags on your windows to block out the light. And, you know, you're talking about the worst moment of your life, you know, and I'm sitting in front of, you know, these people, and I'm just, yeah. And it, you know, and yeah, it made for great TV, but it was all consuming. And yeah, that was, whew.
That was 4 years you did that?
I did that for 3 seasons. Yeah, I did 22 episodes, 3 seasons for it was, first it was Discovery Channel, and then it became, of course, Investigation Discovery, but we did 3 seasons of that. It's just, you know, I ran out of cases. I mean, there's only so many unsolved cases. And to be honest, I mean, I was looking to do something different at that point. I was still writing books at the same time. I never missed a beat writing books while I did that show and did the show. And, you know, and I brought out a lot of information again during that show. They let me do some stuff, not everything I wanted, but, you know, they let me do some stuff. I'll give Investigation Discovery that much. They did let me do some stuff. I mean, the hook of the show was, you know, they could not deny the hook of the show. The hook of the show was, you know, I went out, I looked at, for example, I looked at Long Island serial killer case 10 years ago when nobody even heard of it. I looked at that. I looked at the Atlantic City. I looked at the Highway of Tears in British Columbia. I mean, Israel Keys, all these different cases all over the country. And guiding me along the way was I had a real serial killer on the phone who I would send him information about the cases and get his kind of me being Clarice, he being, you know, Hannibal Lecter. I would get his take on the case. And so, you know, and he was on the show. I never named him while the show was running. He had a quote unquote code name on the show, which I didn't come up with. The president of the network did. And so he would come on the phone and we'd discuss the case, together. And he'd say, you're looking for, we'd disguise his voice, you know, this is the guy you're looking for. He's this type of guy. And, you know, so that was the hook. And it worked. I mean, it was good.
You're looking for a radio host.
When you're looking back on it, now that they found the Long Island serial killer, was he close? And Israel Keys.
Was he close? I don't know if he was close. I think we were close. Me and I had a forensic psychologist who I consulted with on the show, John Kelly, great guy, taught me a lot of what I know today. With Long Island serial killer, we had a feeling it was somebody very, very local, very local. And I kept hearing that. Also, you know, I want to say about that case, you have two separate cases there. And I said this on the show. I believe there's two separate cases here. You have the four on the highway and Shannon Gilbert. That's one serial killer case. And then over in the marsh area, which is far away, I mean, it's not like right around the corner. You have all these other bodies that have been dismembered, et cetera. There's a male even over there. There was a pregnant woman. There's, you know, their limbs are found 40 miles away in the Pine Barrens. A head is found on Fire Island, you know, that sort of thing. So you have two separate serial killer cases, I think, going on there. And I pretty much know who's responsible for the other ones. That is a given. This has been reported to the right people, and they just, you know, they don't want to hear from a guy like me. But I developed some really great sources for that anonymous sources who knew those victims very well. And they told me what's going on there. And it makes all the sense in the world. You know, when we think about serial killers, we have to stop thinking about, you know, as we talked about earlier, the guy who lives alone or he's married and he lives in a dingy house and, you know, he hides.
Oh my.
In the basement. We have to stop and consider everything, because don't forget, you know, gangs in the country pick their psychopath to be their serial killer. So that guy goes out and he, you know, kills, you know, this rival. That's a serial killer. Whether we want to, you know, we'd never do a documentary about that on Netflix because it's not sexy. Right. But it's still serial killing, you know, so organized crime, you know, mob guys, hitmen, you know, they're serial killers, the Iceman. I mean, these people are serial killers. So when you look at these cases, unsolved cases, you have to consider all of that. You can't just say, oh, geez, I'm looking for that guy who drives the beat up truck. He works construction and he drinks at the bar every night. And then once a month he goes out and he finds someone, you know, and, you know, when we find him, you know, he's going to have 10 bodies in the basement and, you know, his dad sexually abused, you know, all of that. That's, we have to forget to look at these things. We can't look at them just that way. We have to look at, you can't get blinders on. You have to look at it every which way.
Right. Hey, Al, are we able to interview Matthew for another 2 hours?
No.
Thanks, man.
Okay, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
No, we are kind of cover the end. I was going to say, so, you know, how do you like to be found by people, like social media, website? What's your favorites?
I mean, you can go to mwilliamphelps.com, and then from there you can get into everything else, you know, the podcasts, my social media. You can at M. William Phelps, you can find me on all the social media stuff, and YouTube. I have some stuff up. So, yeah.
Well, great. Well, of course, we'll have that up on the website. And I found you on TikTok, so I followed you, just so you know.
Oh, good. Thanks. You know, I hate it. But I have to do it, but I hate it.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan of it, but I've got a pretty good following, so I'm kind of stuck with it at the moment.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's good.
But
that's
I'm not wearing any makeup, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll leave that for Mike.
Put some makeup on someday and talk about a murder, and you'll probably get more following.
It will be even hotter. I just, I've got enough. I've got enough of that stuff going on.
So. Or put on a dress.
Again, I leave that for Michael.
Well, that's skirting the issue, though.
Oh, see, boom.
Yeah, see, yeah, that's why he's there. Well, we appreciate you and work you're doing, and I think it's fantastic. And again, thank you. So, M. William Phelps, Matt, thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Nice speaking with you, Matthew.
You too, Mike.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.